Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I have anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 15, Episode 4, The Lynchpin. This week, Bob broke down the timeline surrounding the murder of Demario Lowes. We also got a chance to hear from the state's key witness themselves, and it was ground-shattering. We have a lot to discuss this week, and Bob, Jant, and I are here to discuss it all.
All right, yeah, I think this was a big episode, and from here, we're kind of, Eric and I, we've got a lot going on this week. So I guess I'll talk about some of that now. I can't really talk about all of it, but we've made a lot of connections, communications this week. We have received, I sound like a politician, just like saying
words. I like that you're like anything, right?
It's true. We're all going to leave this thinking, he didn't tell us anything at all.
A lot of ins, a lot of outs. There's a lot going on here.
But a lot we of did moving get pieces.
We did get the second half of the prosecutor's file, which is all the appeal stuff. And then we ended up. So on Monday, I just let you guys kind of know how the week's going so far. Monday, Eric and I took off and we were looking for a particular witness, kind of struck out on that, kind of burned the day, and then talked to somebody Monday night. And then we had to go actually scan the whole DA's file because they gave it to me in paper. That was about 1,500 pages. So
wow.
We spent quite a bit of time at the scanner yesterday getting all that stuff done. We're indexing all that. But where we're going from here, we're kind of trying to decide, do we keep going forward with all the story and the stuff that we're pulling apart, or do we back off a little bit here and we start, because we haven't laid down a whole lot of like basic facts of the crime yet, you know, because we just got right into, this was the state's case. This is how we've already dismantled it, because that's kind of the work that I'd already done leading up to this, just to figure out what was going on. So we're going to kind of take a step back this week, and we're going to be starting to work on the crime scene investigation, the autopsy, stuff like that we normally do. So this week will be a little less storytelling and a little more of starting to get into some of the meat and potatoes of the case is what we have going on this week. Also this week, what can I tell you? I made contact with the Attorney General's Conviction Integrity Unit.
Ooh.
So here's the thing, like any official communication has to go through their like media relations.
Okay.
And so I'm waiting for an official statement. So I'll just tell you this. I've made contact. We're waiting on an official statement where they're at. We already kind of knew that the CIU has had this case for a significant amount of time already. Can't really tell you much more than that. It was an encouraging phone call. That's what
Great.
I can tell you. And so that's kind of the stuff that we have going on right now. What did you guys think of this episode? I think it was kind of an important one for me. I'm rambling so much right now because like I have four different things going on. So I've got like the investigative work we're doing, other stuff, things that we're doing, and putting together an episode and breaking down all these documents all at the same time. So I'm kind of scattered with where I'm trying to be at right now, because there's more. There's certainly more with the Sony Lucas thing that I'm still piecing together that's going to come later. But that's why we're pulling back right now. So how about this? How about I stop rambling? And what did you guys think of the episode?
So I'll just start off right with a question. Right, with like this episode raised a lot of questions more than it did provide answers, I feel like, for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest one is, how can we truly believe? Like, it's bonkers to believe that they didn't interview Sonya Lucas the night of. Like, that there's no document saying they interviewed her. DeMario's body was 6 feet from her door.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no interview with her.
I don't think there's any question that they did interview her. Obviously, we heard her story.
Mm-hmm.
But like, when you read McGinnis's report, it references the original statement.
Yeah.
But the original statement isn't in the file.
Well, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at, is it's bonkers for them to make us try to believe that there was no interview.
Yeah. And I just want to make sure I'm being fair with that. I don't think anyone has, from the state side or the police side, has claimed that they didn't interview her that day. It's not there. Eric and I were talking about this yesterday, because we're going through the prosecutor's file where they have the murder book copied in their file. And we're going through it, and there's lots more there than what I got, but there's still all these crazy, and I'm trying to, you know, because she's new doing this, so I'm trying to explain to her, I'm like, this is not normal. Mm-hmm. Like every time we're reading a report, and it generates questions that like you have, like that, mm-hmm. right? So we're like, okay, so when did this happen? Or where did this? Usually the next page, the answer's there. And in this case, it's not. It's so scattered. Like, so for example, you read a report that says, in Sonya Lucas's previous interview, she claimed she didn't know anything. And we're like, okay, where's the previous interview?
Right.
And it's not there. They're acknowledging that it happened, but it's not. And there's all these insane gaps in this case file.
Well, let me ask you, just to go back to one of the original correspondences, and then what he replied to your kind of more calling out letter, this idea of a former chief who didn't understand the rules of evidence, who shredded a bunch of documents. Mm-hmm. That's sort of what are the circumstances in which that could be the reason that suddenly certain pieces of the file would be missed? I mean, is that kind of a catch-all? Do you feel like that was thrown out there as a catch-all? Like, and by the way, if there's any documents missing, it could be that those specific documents just happened to be shredded by someone who thought they could shred them?
No. So, here's the thing. When he sent that first email, I know personally the chief that was the chief before him and who had been chief for a long time. So I contacted him. His name's Roger Lang. And asked him, because I assumed he was referring to Roger. So I said, I'll find out.
Right.
I talked to Roger, and he said, he's like, no, I didn't do that. He said, but the chief before me did. There was an instance where they just were basically, sounds like basically he told some officers to go into the storage room and clean a bunch of this crap out. And then they shredded a bunch of files. He said, so that did happen.
Okay.
So what it seems like what happened is that happened, and this is my hypothesis, that becomes this catch-all for, well, now we don't have like anything anybody asked for, because they didn't shred the whole room, right? They shredded some stuff.
Right. But it seems a little crazy for someone to be like, this file looks like it could be thinned out a little bit. I'm just going to randomly grab some pages from this one specific case and shred those, and then I'll do it for a different case.
And that's what that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, that didn't happen, right? So the fact that all the transcripts of interviews and tapes and recordings and all this stuff is missing, that's what he's claiming. Well, that was all they basically he's claiming. We had the murder book, which was the basic investigative file, and then they had all this other stuff, and it must be all the other stuff got shredded. What that chief didn't do is say, go through each file and pull out randomly, you know, like, pull the timesheet out of that one and shred it. So, like, that's bullshit. That is not an excuse. This former chief shredding case files is not why just the timesheet is missing from this case file. So, no, that excuse doesn't hold water at all. Could be, yeah, there's no way that happened.
Right. But also, why did that chief shred case files? You can't just look at a room and say it's getting full. Let's go ahead and shred some stuff. Wouldn't you just...
Yeah,
Anyway, whatever.
I don't know all the details of it other than it was something to the extent of, basically it came down to the excuse for it came down to like a lack of communication. As in like the chief meant get rid of this stuff we don't need, and the officers that went and did it just threw out a bunch of stuff.
Right. Gotcha.
Supposedly something like that. But who knows what happened, but it makes for a great excuse for any FOIA request ever. Anytime for anything dating before that is like, oh, the chief shredded a bunch of stuff.
So I do have another quick one that kind of is along the lines with Sonia. And that's the idea that Mario said JoJo. Do we even know that was Jody's street name?
I think so. So I was told, and that's, you know, there's people that are connected to the case that I've spoken to, you know, before I got into it. And that was like one of the things people said, like, nobody ever called Jody JoJo. But you heard me like interview LaShawn, you know, the owner of Dialogue. Mm-hmm. And he referred to Jody as JoJo.
Okay.
You know, so, and like throughout the report, there were different people that say that, you know, refer to Jody as JoJo. So I think that, and there was somebody that tested, a couple people that testified too, that they were known as that. So I had been told that's not even what they went by. That was what they went by. And McGinnis knew that there's so much stuff that I want to come up. Because I went through this whole file yesterday. I'll just tell you this. There's definitely a connection between Jody and McGinnis from prior to this.
Okay.
That we'll get into later.
Okay. God, I hate when you drop those little... Well, and
I think the idea of them knowing the street name probably isn't that absurd. Because if you go back and listen to that Andrew Collins interview that you did a few years ago that you just redropped.
Yeah.
He was looking for an individual that he only knew their street name.
Yeah. Oh, there's stuff all through this file like that. Like they're looking for Coco, and then they have to talk to three people to figure out what Coco's actual name is so they can find Coco. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
I just want to quickly, before I forget, Tool Girl just asked a couple minutes ago, just so we know, did Benton Harbor have body cams on their police officers at the time of this murder? Do you know?
I do not know. I don't think so, but we don't even have dispatch tapes. So I'm sure, and I asked for in my FOIA request any and all recordings. I believe I even specifically mentioned body cam footage if it exists, and was told that there's none of that. There are no recordings.
Got it.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Well, I thought the episode was great. I was, like everyone else, pretty blown away hearing Sonia talking about what really happened and, you know, the whole affidavit and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm glad that you followed your instinct that the story of I heard a bunch of shots, so I ran outside to get potentially right in the middle of it to see what was going on seemed very surprising and strange. I love that you were like, I guess that maybe is going to be one of the early threads I pull on to see what happens.
Well, yeah, and that was literally, and now you guys are seeing, like, when I came right out the beginning, I'm like, this is wrongful conviction, because the pre-work, it wasn't my intention to, like, we've never been a show where you know, some of, like, the bigger productions where they spend a year investigating a case and produce this whole series and it's already kind of predetermined. We do things in real time, but I do have to do some preliminary investigative work to make sure that it's a case that we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, Sony's the first person I interviewed, the very, very first person that I interviewed in the case. And it was just like, well, this is the linchpin of the state. It's very obvious from the trial record, like without Sonia, Jody doesn't get convicted. It's a completely weak and circumstantial case. So let's just go see what she's got to say. And then, you know, and I had heard rumors that she has told people that that's not what really happened. So I went to go find out and it was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, okay. And her actual story sure does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just to kind of get, I mean, I'm not getting out in front of this necessarily, but I think my thought as all of that was playing out in the episode was, is this one of those situations that we've heard of before? And obviously you've dealt with it in past cases where someone says, hey, I said this thing, it's not true, for whatever reason, whether it be that the police convinced you or someone told you your brother had done something and you thought that you needed to say that they did, whatever. Is this a situation where the argument would naturally be by the prosecution, well, this person is lying. Like, they're lying now. They were telling the truth then and they're lying now.
That certainly could be an argument. I don't expect to get that argument, to be honest with you. I mean, I have not. I've got an email in to Amy Bird, the new prosecutor. I haven't heard back from her yet. But just from what I've heard from other people that have dealt with her, she seems to be a fair prosecutor and seems to have, you know, looking for the truth in any of her cases. I'm sure she's really overwhelmed right now I'm sure I've talked about this, but the sitting prosecutor just up and resigned kind of without notice a couple months ago. Like I was communicating with him, like he was emailing me back and forth about this case, and then all of a sudden, poof, he's gone. And so she just took over. And so now she's got this whole caseload on top of her. So it's, you know, she's dealing with. Someone could try and make that argument, but you got to look at like the totality of the evidence. And clear, obviously, you guys haven't heard it all, but like, look at just what you know now.
Yeah.
So she's claiming that she was pressured by McGinnis and McKinney to give this statement and that they told her to say, like, straight up, the story came from them.
Mm-hmm.
You have Sherelle Moore on the stand saying what McGinnis wrote in his report is not true. That's not what I said. Also, I told him about my handicapped mother and kids being in the house, and he eliminated that. You have LaShawn Harper saying they came to the restaurant the very next morning, and I told them then we were. And at that point, he did, like, now he doesn't know the time. He doesn't remember the time. LaShawn remembers the parts of the night that were abnormal, right? That they had to work really late, that they had drinks afterward, that Cornelius gave Jody a ride home. But when it comes to like what time was it? Who signed who out? You heard a lot of like, well, you know, usually we do that. And that's how, you know, because those are routine things that happen all the time. It's kind of how you expect memory to work at that point. But at that, you know, hours later, when the police chief came in and asked where Jody was, and LaShawn says we were working late, at that point, he knew exactly. I'm sure he told him we left at fill in the blank time, whatever that time was. And that's not in there. You know, so you have all the, and then the time of the murder. That, you know, that they're pushing this 12:40 time of the murder when McKinney was dispatched to the scene at midnight and was interviewing Victoria Miles at 12:30, and all these different indications that the crime happened so much earlier. So there, it's not like everything in this file seems in the up and up. Looks like the officer did a great job and was doing their best to be open and honest with everybody. And there's just one person saying he lied. Rather, we have like, just in the little bit we've heard so far, really only three episodes on the case, it's just stacking up. Every single person we heard from has either said McGinnis has lied, something's missing from the report that I told McGinnis. That we're pressured. Sherelle in her testimony also said that McGinnis pressured her, kept trying to get her to change her story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think when you have all of that stacked up, just a little bit ago in the YouTube chat, Dr. Shiloh from LA Not So Confidential had just said she's a professional that works with law enforcement in her capacity. And she says, I already have some strong feelings that some cops should be going to federal prison over this case. So like that's the feeling that people that know the system are getting hearing this. So I don't expect, that's a really long answer to a short question, but I don't expect that a prosecutor be like, nope, she's lying. She's lying now.
Right.
Also, not for nothing, it was a stupid story.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, who would believe, right. Like, how the hell did anybody believe it to begin with? You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Wendell's fine, too, in McKinney's report about being dispatched at midnight.
Yeah.
That's big. Because, you know, as you said earlier, he said he interviewed Victoria Miles at 12:30. And you're like, that could be 12:30 or it could be a typo.
Right.
But are you telling me now there's two typos?
Oh, and Wendell responded more to that even in on the fan page. Like the sequence of events.
Mm-hmm.
So you have McKinney in his report saying that he ordered London to secure the scene. I think it was London, one of the cops, to secure the scene. After he had been briefed and done all this stuff, and then when he started interviewing, he interviewed some neighbor or some of the people that were gathered around. And then when he went to go interview Victoria Miles, he ordered people to secure the scene. Then you have is either London or Takamoto. One of the reports says that at the direction of the detective, they secured and taped off the scene. And then you have McGinnis's report says when he got to the scene, the crime scene was already taped off. So you like start to piece together the order of things. And you see very clearly, obviously, McKinney was there way before McGinnis got there. And so you can like piece all these little things together and see that like there's just this 12:40 time was just completely made up. And now we're going to be getting into at some point, there was a homicide task force involved. So they had some state troopers there and Barron County sheriffs that were there. And reading some of their reports, and I just was glancing through them yesterday when we were scanning through them. And one of them said that the murder happened approximately midnight. On their report, but on McGinnis's report, it says it happened at 12:40.
Yeah, that moment in the trial, as you read it and depicted it with the tape running down and all that kind of stuff, was incredibly frustrating. We've seen that before. We've absolutely seen that. I mean, that's a real kind of Christina Gutierrez stipulating to, you know, livor mortis or, you know, talking like the cell phone stuff that you're like, but wait, you want to be able to wind back the clock and go, no. I have to be able to stop you from saying that. I have to be able to stop you from stipulating to something that is a huge, huge other linchpin of the case. That was kind of a hard listen, too. I mean, listen, you are definitely riling people up already, and it just does not take very long. We're a couple of episodes in, and already people are like, oh, what? No. Yeah,
that stipulation was bananas. It was more than just the fact that the very basic math shows that the stipulation was inaccurate. But it's just the to me, the sheer incompetency and unpreparedness of the defense attorney. Like, how have you not heard this tape before?
Yeah.
Like, you hear him, like, he says in the transcript, I don't know what's going to be said still on this. He hasn't heard it. And instead of, like, what should have happened in that, first of all, he should have heard it beforehand. What should have happened there was, can we take a recess so I can hear the rest of this tape so I can decide if the jury needs to hear it or not? Instead, he's just like, we'll just stipulate to 12:40 being the first call.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't have sounded less like he was like, none of this matters. None of this matters. This is a waste of everyone's time. Why are we even bothering with this? Like, that's coming from Jody's defense attorney. Is like, what?
Right.
Why are we bothering with all of this? Come on, let's move on.
Like, yeah.
No.
And I truly think that it's because, so little, you know, some information, and I need to verify the exact day. So don't consider that because I haven't verified through like the documentation, but from what Jody has told me and other people connected to the case have told me, I do know that Jody had an attorney that was representing them through. So there's this whole thing. So Jody was arrested the very next day. So this was a Thursday night. Friday, they go in and they do their interrogated, they're interviewed, and they get arrested, but they weren't arrested for the murder. There was no evidence that they committed the murder. So they arrested them on the armed robbery. so that they could hold them. So Jody was held for the armed robbery all the way until July of the next year. It wasn't until after Sonia Lucas's testimony or statement came in. And from what Jody says at that point, the judge was telling the prosecutor, like, you need to either take them to trial or drop this case, because they really didn't have any evidence against them on the armed robbery either. There was, they were getting jailhouse witnesses and snitches stuff to come forward. But there was nothing solid for that either. And at that point, they got Sonia Lucas' testimony, and then they charged them with the murder at that point.
Wow.
That is just terrifying. So, I mean, for anyone. Yeah. I don't care what your record is. I just don't care. If the idea, and we've, again, heard about this happening before, the idea that you just let someone sit as you try to figure some stuff out and put your, it's just like, oh, that's
right.
Very unnerving.
Well, and what I was getting at was Jody had an attorney, like a public defender, working with them during that. That was also then transferred over and was supposed to represent them at trial. And from what Jody, and this is the part I'm not sure about the exact timing, but from what Jody says, 10 days before the trial, that attorney was taken off the case and White was put on it. So White was, according to Jody, White was only on the case for 10 days before the trial.
Oh my goodness.
And so if that's the case, they look at this police file and it says 1240, 1240, 1240, 1240, 1240. Well, it doesn't. And if they don't have the timesheet to know that it was 1205. So they see 1240, 1240, 1240. They see Sherelle says that they're home at 11. And all the, so the police file says Jody's home from work at 11. The murder happened at 1240. And then Sherelle gets back at 3 something in the morning and Jody's there. So Jody's unaccounted for based in McGinnis's file. Jody's unaccounted for from 11 p.m. until 3 in the morning, right? So it doesn't matter if the crime happened at 1240 or 1230
right,
or 1:30
right.
or 2 o'clock.
Right.
And so I think that's part of it. Jody's attorney never investigated. I know from talking to Princella and LaShawn that the first they heard about the trial was when they were subpoenaed to go to the trial. They never, ever spoke with Jody's defense attorney prior to the trial.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Yeah. Depending on how this all shakes out, I feel like this is one of those cases that should be taught to students in criminal justice. Like, because there are just so, I mean, depending on what happens with the timing and you find out about the White being taken off, it feels like essentially now we're just building a checklist of things that you can just go, okay, well, here's how to get the result you want with bad evidence. You can still get the result you want. You just have to do these things. You know what I mean?
Things. It makes it really easy. Yeah.
Oh,
and also take somebody, you know, an indigent person of color from a community that has no trust in the police and isn't going to be willing to speak and doesn't have resources to really defend themselves. Yeah. All that adds into it. We better get into the question. We're already 20 minutes in and we haven't gotten into the questions yet.
Let's do it. Let's get some a little bit of clarification as, again, we're trying so hard to pin down times and find ways to prove things happened or didn't happen. Where and when they did. Colin says, if Damara was pronounced dead at the scene by a medical professional, his death certificate should show the date and time this happened, which presumably was before the blanket mentioned by Sonia was placed over him. Would this be true and would there be a copy?
No, I do have the copy. I just found it this morning, actually. But no, the medical examiner comes later. So Demario's official time of death is like 3:47 in the morning.
Right.
Because that's how, so you got to wait for the medical examiner to get there. They've got to do their examination and then they will pronounce them dead. So those times are never the actual time of death. That is when they were pronounced dead. Because somebody else on the Facebook page had been like, well, you're saying that this happened before midnight, but DeMario's headstone says that they died on November 16th, not the 15th. That's because their official time of death was 3:40 something in the morning on the 16th.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks for that clarification. Other questions about Sonia? I think there are definitely folks who are concerned with Sonia's safety. I saw a post about that just here in the chat as we're speaking now. But also, Lilia says, this episode really underlined the care with which you do the good work that you're doing. Really appreciate it. Did Ms. Lucas risk being charged with perjury when she agreed to be on this episode? I worry she has willingly put herself in a vulnerable position for the sake of justice and should be protected. And Madeline said, is there a statute of limitations for perjury regarding Sonia's statement?
I don't think she has any risk of that. I mean, we discussed it briefly, but also there is a statute of limitations on perjury. I don't know what it is. I'm not a lawyer. But like most things other than murder, there's a statute of limitations of 3, 5, 7 years, something like this. And this has been over 20 years since then. And again, in order for that to happen, you'd have to have a prosecutor that is really dug in and is trying to do things. You know, I think of like Jay Wilds and Kevin Urich and Thiru Vignaraja. Like those are the, you know, from the Anand Syed case, those are the type of prosecutors you expect to, in order to try to stop somebody from coming forward, we're going to charge you with perjury and we're going to do this. I don't think that's what we're dealing with here.
Great. Brian says, did the Benton Harbor police interview Sonia's stepfather? My guess is no, but he should have been able to corroborate the lie of her opening the door and speaking with Mario if it truly happened that way. She says she woke him up after the gunshots.
So that I'm told yes, but there's no report of it. Is it? And that's another way. And he's sadly has passed away since then. But yeah, I was told by Sonia and some other folks that, yeah, he was interviewed that night, which again, that was another one of those things. Like, why didn't they interview the other adult there? And they're like, oh, they did. They just said they did. Well, they didn't say they didn't. They just didn't include anything in the report as though that had happened.
Right.
Statute of limitations in Michigan for perjury is 6 years.
6 years. There you go. Thanks,
Zach. Yeah, she's golden. And so Juliet says she really appreciates that Sonia is telling the truth now and that she's very admirable of her to sign the affidavit. She's so glad that she did. But Juliet is just wondering, because you didn't play the entire interview, if Sonia expressed regret or anything like that.
It was an interesting discussion because it was more like Sonia didn't want to acknowledge that she had said the lie to begin with, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, she was like, how would I know? I didn't say that. I'm like, and you heard little bits of the interview, you know, that I played where I'm like, yeah, but you did eventually testify to that because, you know, because you heard me, my approach at the beginning was, I'm not on anybody's side. I just want to know what happened. So just tell me what happened.
Right.
So she went into it like, okay, you just want to know what happened. This is what happened. And then I kind of was like, well, but you had testified to this, you know, and that's when it got into, well, that's where that came from. But we really didn't get into it. And it wasn't my place in a situation like that. When I realized pretty early on, wow, this is very significant and we're going to need an affidavit out of this. And I'm going to need, and I need every minute of this documented. So no one can say I tried to lead her or do anything like that. So like that wasn't my place or time to like get into a podcast interview. Like, what do you think about this now? Or why, you know, why do you feel about that? I wasn't going there at all. I was just very strictly sticking to the facts.
Yes.
Of what happened. So
yeah.
No, we didn't really, I never asked her that question because it wasn't relevant to what I was trying to accomplish in that interview.
Sure. Well, and you know, if it's true that her son was, they were looking for him and they were sort of threatening her with that.
No, well, she said they didn't threaten her.
Oh, well, sorry.
Yeah.
That she was worried that was in play, even if it was not explicitly said. And, you know, you've given us a pretty strong context for what the community's relationship with the police was like already. So I wouldn't take her not saying that in this interview as like she feels it doesn't bother her that somebody has been in prison because of, you know, that moment.
Yeah, no, it just didn't come up. And I also want to acknowledge, too, I don't know if anybody has a question on this in the follow, but some people talked to me about it in the fan group on Facebook that they were concerned about, you know, if I was leading her in any way. And I think the one part they got into is when I mentioned, like, so did you feel like they were pressuring you or this pressure came in? Like, maybe I had introduced that. Just know that this there's over 20 more minutes to this interview that's all, because of situations like this where you have an affidavit and it's probably going into court, I maintained the original unedited with metadata showing that it's the original recording. It's never been edited. The full thing, I only played little pieces of it for you guys, but I can just assure you that I didn't lead her anything. So some of what you were hearing was me repeating back to her what she had already said, particularly that part about being pressured. I actually didn't ask many questions at all other than explain to me what you mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
Or can you expand on that? Things like that. I'm just letting her go. The only question, you heard it, the only real question I asked was because I had been told by other people that the police had been threatening her. And so that was the one, because she had never said through the interview that she had been threatened. So I wanted to make sure you heard that part where I did ask her that. That question did come from me when I said, did you feel like they were, or I said, you know, did they threaten you? And she said no. And then we left it at that. Like I didn't, but I had to ask that question because of what I had heard prior to going into the interview.
Right.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
And I would also add, I mean, this is a little bit different because obviously saying that someone actually named their killer before they died is, you would imagine that if you were the one being asked to do that, you could assume that you were a big part of the case. Mm-hmm. But God knows what they told her about the case. I mean, think about other cases in which someone said, I didn't know I was important. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I thought I just said a thing that supported a bunch of other stuff, and they had all this stuff, and this was just bolstering something that was already a strong case. So again, I'm not saying that it's not a big deal to say I heard them name their killer, but you don't know. If they say, we know it, we've proved it, we have everything we need, we just need to button this up with you, you know what I mean? Like, you don't necessarily know what role you're playing in a case overall, just you know your tiny little part of it. And yeah. You may not even know that if they've been lied to about what your part is.
And you should know this too, like what she's saying, and then now that I'm reading more and more to the file, like this was, like, it wasn't just tell us who, you know, who DeMario said, you know, like the pressure that she's alleging was put on her was not, we need you to say that DeMario told you who killed him. And then she came up with, well, he said JoJo did it. That's not what she's alleging. Mm-hmm. She's alleging they told her, we need you to say that he said JoJo did it. And that's when I said, like, this appears to be like they're absolutely framing Jody. Like that, like they, I can't get too far ahead of myself, but how they got to that point is bananas too.
Mm.
I'll give you a little piece of it, 'cause I don't know where it'll come in. So there was somebody that came forward based on some reward money. Literally in the report, it says, when I started offering reward money, this person had told me that he was at Sonia's that day. And then it was like all the other witnesses, obviously verified that he was not there, that the whole thing was made up. But then said that DeMario had told Sonia who killed them, but it was a different name. It was a different name, right? So this person tells McGinnis that Sonia told him that DeMario in his dying breath said it was this other person. And then he took that story and goes to her And after she says, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true, and then finally gets her to say it, but instead of the name that the other person had said, insert JoJo into it instead.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. That's really bad.
Trust me, people, this case is...
That's really bad.
We're just scratching the surface. This is so much worse.
This is the cringiest case so far. I mean, I am grimacing and cringing left and right. Ugh.
I know other listeners brought this up, but even just like her details of the murder, of the idea that there's no blood. She sees no blood. He's hurt, but there's no blood. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, there's a mouthful of blood.
Yeah, in the trial testimony.
In that story.
Because in the real story, he was covered up with a sheet the whole time. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things for me when I was interviewing her. Like, there was so much veracity to it when she was interviewing me. She's like, I went out and they knocked on the door. I came out and she said the first thing they asked was, do you know this person? And she's like, I don't know who that is. They're under a sheet. And then every time I brought up again, I'm like, so did you didn't talk to him at all? And then you could hear her. She starts to get heated about it. She's like, how am I? He was under a white sheet. When I opened the door, he was under a white sheet. It's such a very specific memory of him being under a sheet.
Mm. I'm curious to see. I know you said next week we're going to get into like the autopsy and that stuff. I'm curious to see the autopsy because I'd like to see what his injuries really were too.
Mm-hmm. I'll save that because I got to have something to write for this. This week. I believe Erica's words at the end of the day yesterday is like, "Oh, we're cooked the rest of the week because now we've been crazy busy this week doing other stuff, and now we've got to like write an episode." And just so you guys know, recording this Wednesday, so we'll be starting that process on Thursday for Sunday's episode.
Gotcha. Linwood says, "Are there any documents other than the timesheet that were in the prosecutor's files but not in the files from the police department?" If the answer is yes, I'm sure we'll be going over it in a future episode. Just wanted to see if there were other bombs like that to look forward to.
Oh, yeah, there's more. Imagine this. Imagine there's a report in the police file that looks one way, and the same report is in the prosecutor's file, and it looks completely like there's parts of it missing in the prosecutor's file. Imagine something like that.
That's gross.
Okay. Christina says... From the very first intro episode, I've been wondering about this particular issue every week. I know that Benton Harbor is predominantly Black, but what about the larger demographics of the county? What was the racial makeup, for example, of Jody's jury composed of? Wondering if that could have played a role in the decision-making process of the jury.
Those are good questions that I'll have to get back to you on later when we get into that stuff.
Got it. Melanie's wondering if it's... every week we get questions about... cell phone records and diner, the records of the diner to, again, try to help pin down times that phone calls were made and so forth.
Sorry, I'm thinking because there was a part that I was thinking about. This is a tricky episode this week to put together because it's like the crime scene and the autopsy and all this like evidence, but there's no evidence, right? So there's not much put together. But I mean, the short answer is no. There's nothing in the police file of any phone records for anyone. But I found the report where they returned DeMario's cell phone back to his girlfriend, Rolanda, after they analyzed it, but no analysis in the report in the file. Because more importantly to me at this point, I keep saying this, and perhaps I'm overly confident. I'm very confident this conviction gets overturned. But we need to get justice for DeMario. And we need to find out who killed DeMario, which comes back to what was he going to do when he dropped Canvas off? And he had something important to do. Why was he there? Who was he meeting? The police had his phone to analyze it. All I have is a report that they gave it back to Rolanda and no analysis in there.
I mean, it's not the best tracks covering if that's what's going on. There's some.
It's
definitely some oversights to documentation referring to other documents that have been pulled. That's not the most thorough. Covering your ass, I guess.
Yeah. Like, where is that? That was actually the part we were at when I had that conversation with Erica yesterday.
Yeah.
When I was like, in a normal file, you find this document and you're like, oh, cool. There's a cell phone analysis. We should be able to find out who DeMario was talking to. We should be able to find out at what time DeMario got there. There are all these different things. And then, nope, none of that's in the file anywhere.
I'm very hopeful there's a very rational explanation for all of this. that doesn't amount to a full-on massive frame job.
I'm going to bounce back to the demographics really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Barron County is 74% white, about 14% black, and 6% Hispanic.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. That's really it for our questions. We have a couple of questions about people wondering about things that I'm sure we'll get to, or just like kind of confusion about, like, for example, Emily, I want to acknowledge, I saw your post. I think it's a little confusing, just because Jody was in a different follow-up, a different podcast's conversation, and she and a fellow listener of Truth and Justice brought up the gun, saying that for sure it came from Jody's foster brother. It's like this happened over here in this other conversation, and this person said that they thought that we had already talked about it, but had we? Are we going to be talking more about? I know if it's the shotgun that Emily you're referring to, I know we talked about the gold painted shotgun.
Yeah, we're going to do probably a whole episode, or maybe probably. Hopefully we'll be able to do it in just a single episode, but everything about the armed robbery, because that's the majority of that, like the majority of the case file, imagine a ream of paper,
mm-hmm.
like a 500 page ream of paper. Like that's basically the police file thickness that I have from the prosecutor's office. And I would say 2/3 of it are all about the investigating the robbery. Cause remember that's where Jody was being held, was because of the robbery the whole time. So we'll get into the gold shotgun and that. And also Jody, you know, Jody, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago or last week, that Jody has been sending the pages of their biography to put together. Erica last week took in everything that we had got and had like 71 pages of it. Then we were having issues with JPay, figured out that it seems like there's a file storage limit. So I kept getting notifications that I had more emails coming in, but the emails weren't there. So there's a little bit more to that. But Jody talks in pretty good detail about that whole situation in there. So we've got some of that coming. So we'll get to all that stuff with the gun. I do want to mention though, one listener had pointed out, cause in the last episode, you know, I had said, I'm trying to figure out the timesheet. Did the defense attorney have it? Was it in, you know, was it turned over in discovery? They had found, and I apologize to that listener that I haven't had a chance to dig through those appeals files, but some of the appeals documents are online, and they had found at some point Jody had filed an appeal saying that they had the timesheet from I don't know how they got it, and that they gave it to the defense attorney for the defense attorney to use, and they didn't use it. I have to look into that more, but based on what they're saying, that would indicate that it wouldn't be Brady. It would be more ineffective assistance to counsel, because if somehow Jody had, I don't know how Jody got it when they're in jail. You know, filing FOIA requests, or if the old attorney, I have no idea how any of that plays out. But I just want to make sure that we're being upfront about everything, that apparently there is something in an appeals document that indicates that at least Jody had that and tried to give it to the defense prior to the trial. So we'll get into all that some more later, but I just wanted to make sure I acknowledge that.
No, that's really interesting. Thank you. I've been in touch with Jody over JPay, and I thought probably they would be okay with me sharing that they are completely blown away by how many, in their words, good people there are who are concerned about this case, who are showing up for Jody, showing up for Truth and Justice, and it says that they say that it brings tears to their eyes. So I thought that was lovely. And for those of you who have been in touch, you already know this, but it's super appreciated.
Yeah, and again, you guys cannot underestimate enough how important it is to someone who's locked away in prison for any reason, whether they're rightfully or wrongfully, getting communication from the outside world and having somebody to talk to that cares about you is a huge deal. So if you're always thinking about what can you do to help, send Jody an email through JPay. It's super easy, and that makes all the difference in the world. And with that being said, we need to go ahead and wrap this thing up. We need to get into building this week's episode. Again, we're going to talk about the crime scene. We're going to be talking about the autopsy and some of the forensic work that was done on the case. All that's coming this Sunday. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kay Wood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.